Muliebrity is the art and state of being a woman, and I think that should be celebrated. My name is Michelle Lyons. Welcome to the Celebrate Muliebrity podcast. Just a reminder, this podcast is for information only and not a substitute for consulting a healthcare professional. Hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody, and I'm so happy to welcome you to this episode of the Celebrate Muliebrity podcast. I have a very exciting guest today. I'm very excited about my guest today. It is Dr. Alexandra Millsbaugh, the author of Hello Down There, A Guide to Healing Chronic Pelvic and Sexual Pain. And this episode is coming out in May. And May is both Mental Health Awareness Month and it's Pelvic Pain Awareness Month. So the stars are aligning for our conversation today. And this is a book I come back to again and again, and I've recommended, if you're in any of my physio groups or you follow me online, you'll know this is a book I recommend repeatedly. So I'm really pleased to be able to go straight to the source and get some insights. So Dr. Millsbaugh, welcome and thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Michelle. I've been following your work for quite some time now, and so it's a true honor to be able to finally have a conversation with you that's outside of Instagram messages and comments and hearts. So thank you so much for inviting me.
Almost real life.
Almost real life.
So how did you end up? Because I know you're a licensed professional counselor. You're an ASEX certified sex therapist. You're certified in consulting hypnosis, neuro-linguistic programming, and mindfulness-based stress reduction. How did you end up working in pelvic pain or pelvic health?
Pelvic health. Well, you know, the stars aligned for me when I was in grad school. I saw a presentation by a pelvic and sexual pain specialist at the time, who happened to be right in the same town as my university was. And he was presenting on pelvic and sexual pain and the overlap with the history of traumas, and not just physical traumas, but emotional traumas and life stressors and seeing the windup of the nervous system. And it just was that aha moment for me. Because if we reverse 4 years before that, I was producing the Vagina Monologues and I loved doing that. I brought that to Australia when I was at the University of Queensland. And it was just a magnificent performance. But what I noticed within those women's circles where we were, you know, women would talk at these cast meetings and how the monologues would just really help them stretch their voice, they all started sharing all their stories about various pain issues and how they weren't getting help. And so that was always in the back of my mind, like, okay, this is a need that's not being taken care of here. And so then when I saw this presentation by a physician, if you know me, I'm very bold. So I literally went up to the physician after the presentation. I said, "Hi, my name is Alex, and I think you should hire me."
Brava.
And he agreed. So it was amazing. So the stars truly did align. And I was just starting a separate program outside of my graduate study in mindfulness and energy work and hypnosis. And it was just really a perfect match. And so Dr. Robert Eckenberg introduced me to the International Pelvic Pain Society. And that's where I really met my tribe, just seeing so many physical therapists who just looked at the bigger picture. And then meeting physicians from all different fields that truly wanted to understand how it was all connected. And the rest is history. So I've just been really building on my knowledge. And I think I've been to more medical conferences than psych conferences. But we really need to bridge that gap. And so that's my passion and work.
And I think it's so interesting because, you know, 15 years ago, possibly even 10 years ago, if we had started talking about how the mind might influence pelvic health, particularly pelvic pain, I think we would have had a lot of raised eyebrows and a few kind of eye rolls and, you know, a little bit woo-woo, you know, thrown at us. Yeah. But the evidence has just been incontrovertible, I think, over the past couple of years, that if we are going to move towards this biopsychosocial approach instead of just a biomedical approach to pelvic health in general, but particularly pelvic pain, we can't separate the body from the mind. But the pelvic floor is such a psychologically responsive part of our body anyway. Yes, you know,
absolutely.
How could we?
Right.
What do you think is important? Because most of the circles that I swim in are pelvic rehab. So pelvic physios, pelvic OTs, body workers, fit pros. How do you see a psychologically informed practice melding with something that, you know, is maybe more traditionally biophysical? How can we start to integrate the two?
Well, I love that you asked that question, because I think, you know, what started, again, the other aha moment for me was when I saw Laura Mermosley and Adrian Lau from Australia at the time doing this, doing their Explain Pain presentations. I said, okay, someone's really starting to get that the brain is involved, the nervous system is involved, and the perception, right? Our subjective perception and our brain's perception, which goes back to what's all the input. And I think just the how everything in the pelvis reacts to stress. We know the gut is the second brain, right? We've been saying that for years. But now there's, the research really is catching up with, I think, what we've known for a while. Well, you know, thanks to all the trauma research, like from Stephen Porges and Peter Levine and Bessel van der Kolk, right? They're really, and Tanya Singer from Germany. I mean, they're really all looking at how trauma and stress are stored in the body. And when we look at the history, so my dissertation was on the histories of females that have pelvic and sexual pain disorders. And without a doubt, there's always a trauma history. Now, I say that with big T and little t. And I love Gabor Mate's definition of trauma, where it's not what happened to you, it's how the nervous system responded to it. And I think that's so important, because when we ask patients or clients, have you experienced trauma? So many of them actually say no. Like, no, you know, I've had a pretty good life. And then they'll go through, okay, well, tell me about the year or two leading up to when the pain started. And they'll talk about their years of constipation and their years of holding it all in, right? Emotionally, let alone physically. Mm-hmm. They'll talk about how they went through this major change and, you know, all of these huge life things, but they've minimized it. And again, thanks to the trauma research, we know that if we're not expressing it, we're holding it in. And that memory, that emotional memory, and I call it the soundtrack, that soundtrack gets locked in the cells. And then our body starts to move to that soundtrack, which is more rigid versus flexible and fluid. And so I think, you know, pelvic health just puts it all together for us, because we can see, even in energy psychology and energy medicine, we know that there's certain emotions that are stored in certain parts of the body, let alone the location of the vagus nerve, right? It's all rooted in the pelvic floor. And so that is where we feel fear. That's where we feel that sense of lack of safety and lack of security. We've been through a pandemic, so find me one person that hasn't felt that way in the past 2.5 years. But I think, you know, when we're doing a trauma-informed approach or just a psychologically informed approach, we have to understand that there's an energetic being, an emotional being behind the bag of flesh that is our body. And if anything, you know, even just talking to people about, okay, how do your emotions respond when your body feels this way? And how does your body respond when you emotionally feel that way? I mean, if people really allow themselves to think about it or reflect on it, of course there's a connection. It's kind of like a duh, right? But, you know, Western medicine really has us zooming in and saying, oh, well, I don't see anything on this scan or this test. So it must be all in your head. And I say, well, your brain's in your head. So technically, if that's the CEO of the nervous system, then that's true. But, you know, it's all connected. And, you know, I tell this parable, I think I tell it in my book, of two people are in a boat and one person's making a hole in the boat. And the other person's like, what are you doing? And the person says, oh, I'm just making a hole in my part of the boat. Right. And that doesn't make sense. Yeah. And so why would it make sense with the body? And so when we start to look at the cumulative histories of what our nervous system has experienced and how much we've held in versus, you know, and rather than if we didn't have a space to talk about it, if we didn't have, if someone shut us down, even therapists that don't understand this, right? And that's the problem. There's therapists that don't talk about pain and don't talk about sex. And then the physicians don't want to talk about sex or the genitals. And so where are we to go from here?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I'm fairly sure, I think it was Rachel Zofnus who said this, you know, but we only have one brain to process physical and emotional pain. And sometimes she gets confused, you know, and pain is always an output of the brain. And I suppose the big danger, though, that we want to make sure that our patients aren't hearing is she thinks it's all in my head. And to be really careful, because I think sometimes when we start learning about pain science, we can get really excited talking about this. But the messages sometimes that our patients are hearing after years, I mean, we know that women's pain, by and large, is often dismissed or downplayed, or here's some anti-anxiety medication, here's an antidepressant, go home and have a glass of wine and relax. Sex is supposed to be painful. You know, there's a lot of kind of cultural messaging there as well.
Huge.
So I think we have to be patient, and we have to go slowly and not get too giddy when we start explaining the body-mind connection when it comes to pelvic pain.
Yes, absolutely. And something I'll say is, you know, the nervous system, if we're talking specifically only physiologically, and we know we're much more than that, but if we're only talking about the body, the nervous system operates at 240 miles an hour. So by the time the brain is aware of it, it's already happening in the body. So if it's happening in the brain, it's happening in the body, because the body is physically responding to it. And if it's happening in the body,
or even if it's not, if it's not happening, you know, even if the brain thinks it might happen,
that's a great point. Absolutely. Yes. So the brain can respond, whether it's real or imagined, or anticipated, right? We know that we react, whether we're remembering something, whether we're anticipating something, whether it's actually happening. And sometimes the brain, you know, and that's what PTSD is. So if we can help, again, bridge the gaps between the trauma research that we understand of, okay, my physical body is reacting as if I'm still there.
Yes.
And why wouldn't that be the case in other places? But again, that doesn't mean that the only thing we have to change is the brain or the nervous system, because the muscles create their own habits, right? I mean, every cell is kind of thinking for itself at the same time. And so we have to get the body communicating with the brain and with the mind and with everything in between.
Exactly. So I think, you know, that's really what I'm excited about, seeing a new direction for pelvic pain research, in that it's not just all talk therapy from here up, and it's not just all physical work from kind of the waist down. And I'm not sure who to give credit to this quote for, but it was something along the lines of, your body is always present, but your mind is a great time traveler. You know, it can go back to what's happened in the past. It can jump forward to what might happen in the future. Yes. So I think really working on integrating the body with the mind and just getting present, you know, am I safe right now? Is a really good tool to give people to kind of, you know, stop maybe sometimes the spiral of catastrophizing or perseverating, and just really bring them back in. And I think breath work is a great tool for doing that. You've a number of superb exercises in the book. But what I really want to share with folks is just to come back to that point about not getting overly excited about pain neuroscience education and doing too much at once. And I want to talk about your little short story about your piano.
Yes.
So I'm just going to read it, you know, read it through. It's a nice short one. You write, I used to have a really old piano that hadn't been tuned in a long time, and the piano tuner said, well, I can't tune it all the way today, or the strings might break because they're old, but I can tune it a little bit today, and I can come back and tune a little bit next week. I'm going to have to come back every week or two for a few months, and then you can really get it tuned up. And I just thought that was a beautiful analogy for working with a wound up nervous system, you know, that we don't want to scare it by doing too much too soon. We just, you know, we don't want to startle it and have it run off like a scared horse, you know, bolt.
Yes.
And just kind of going gradually and creating that sense of safety and communication. Where do you see, you know, I mean, there's so many tools in here that I would love to, I'd love to take a deep dive into. But I think one of the ones maybe that some of my colleagues may not be familiar with that I think is a really useful model might be the 4D model. Could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes. So the 4D wheel was created by Dr. Gina Ogden. She was a sex therapist and researcher and just an amazing woman and mentor of mine for 15 years. And so her research that looked at probably over 4,000 women's responses, females' responses, looked at what are they looking for when they're healing, when they're looking for improving their sexual experience, their life experience. And what came back time and time again, it was, you know, the typical mind, body, heart, right? This is how my mental story and inner narrative I want to change. Here's the physical stuff that I'd like to change, physical experience and the emotional experience. But time and time again, they talked about that spiritual experience and meaning that sense of connection and disconnection, you know, noticing how they, while they're all four different aspects of the self, they absolutely affect each other, right? Depending on how the physical status of our bodies, that influences the mental story and that influences the emotional reaction. But spiritually, it affects our sense of identity, our sense of connection with ourself. You know, we can have this identity crisis of, okay, I can't run anymore right now. Does that mean I'm no longer an athlete? Or I can't play with my kids on the floor because of my pain. Does that mean I'm a bad mother? Right? You know, all of this identity crisis that because we can't do what we want to do when our body's in such intense pain. And then when we add the fear and the mystery on top of what is pelvic pain, what is happening, nobody seems to know what's wrong. That really can create a sense of disconnect with a higher power, depending on our belief system, let alone our partners and our friends and our family, where they see that we're not getting answers. So then they sometimes can start to say, well, is it all in your head? Are you making this up? Are you wanting attention? Like all of this stuff as if, why would anyone want to live in pain? I still don't understand why someone would think that they would want that. And so it's the full 4D wheel experience. You know, I introduce it in the book as simply a way of just thinking about how it's all connected. You know, we can't experience one without it influencing the other. But also there's both sides. And what I love about Gina Ogden's model of the 4D wheel is there's nothing good or bad, positive or negative. It's all feedback. And in neurolinguistic programming, we talk about how there's no failure. There's only feedback. So she calls it the light side and the shadow side, right? So what is it that I'm wanting to let go of? You know, I want to let go of this pain, but this pain is feedback, right? This pain is letting me know what my brain is focusing on. It's letting me know where I've had past injury. It's letting me know that my body's holding on to an emotion or memory or belief that is keeping me in fight or flight mode. So I want to release it. And then the light side is about what do I want to invite in? What does that look like? What does that mean? Because so many people, I tell a story about a tiger, right? So many people stop thinking about what healing looks like for them because they're so engulfed with their pain experience. And that hijacks the brain and that changes the brain structure, which makes it so much easier to be to catastrophize, to stay in that fear-based mode. And people aren't choosing to be in that. And, you know, again, it's the biomechanics of how the brain hardware changes that makes it difficult for someone to just jump into cognitive behavioral therapy or to jump into these longer meditations. And sometimes if we almost, as you said, kind of with the piano tuning metaphor, if they try to be in the present moment too much too soon, that in and of itself can create an anxiety response. Because I say, you know, if the nervous system is used to being in fight or flight mode, and then you relax it for the first time in a really long time, that's unfamiliar to the body. And whatever's unfamiliar is deemed unsafe. And so the body's going to say, what are you doing? You're relaxing. Something's wrong.
Stop.
Stop. And so we have waking every night at 2 a.m. or we have, you know, the panic attacks when trying to do a breathing exercise or a meditation, they might write it off and they'll say, oh, that doesn't work for me. It makes me worse. It makes my pain worse. And it's like, okay, we turned it too fast. Yeah. We have to gently, you know, Peter Levine talks about that pendulation. We have to gently bring the system and to get used to being in the present, because dissociation is a survival technique that the body does on its own. So the 4D wheel is a way that you can walk the wheel. Literally, I'll put it on the floor. I'll have people walk around it to literally change the brain's perception of the room, which helps us tune into each part. And within one round, you know, the tears start flowing because they start to realize, you know, the connections of a past story that they were told, or a memory that they had with someone, or a time, a medical trauma where they were told that they were going to have this forever, or that there was no cure for X, Y, or Z, or when they were rejected during that breakup or that divorce or the betrayal, right? I mean, the stories, the narratives of what the body's holding on to just starts to come out. And we walk the wheel in the all in the clockwise direction, creating event, you know, the metaphorical concept of a spiral to bring them into that place in the center where everything integrates, where people have that aha moment of, oh, I get it. Okay. You know, and it's just very empowering. So the 4D wheel is great for educators, because we can say, okay, here's all the different pieces that are involved in your experience. And it can be used therapeutically, because both therapist, both clinician and patient and client can use it on their own to go deeper into the different layers of what's happening for them.
Wow. I love that it's such an embodied way of integrating it, because I think, you know, it's one thing to read about it or even to talk about it and do the exercise with pen and paper. But when you're actually physically moving your body as you're going through the exercise, and you're creating, you know, that sense of safety within yourself, but with a facilitator as well, it is like a dramatic rewiring, as you're saying, of the nervous system through the physical body, as well as what's going on. And I think particularly, you know, maybe for women, I'm going to say especially, who have maybe had a pelvic pain diagnosis where they haven't been believed, you know, something maybe like endometriosis or interstitial cystitis. Well, we can't find anything wrong with you, so therefore there mustn't be anything real wrong with you. So, you know, off you go. And this kind of wandering in the wilderness, and then the self-blame starts. What's wrong with me? What did I do wrong? You know, why can't I fill in the gaps? And, you know, anybody I know who's been through that 4D experience really describes it as a sense of coming home to themselves.
Yes.
And it's just, it's a lovely thing to see in another person as they go through that, and just reconciling with themselves and and embracing self-compassion. And it's really powerful work. But I also, what I think, you know, you do so well is to bring, again, kind of these spiritual concepts, but intermesh them with neurophysiology, you know, that are that are very real and objectively measurable outcomes. And I think that's so exciting, you know, for for people, the people that we work with. I just, you know, there are so many things in this book that are useful. I mean, I really feel the meditations are gorgeous in the back. Oh, and what I've done with some of them is I get people to record themselves doing the meditation so they can listen back to their own voice.
Oh, beautiful.
And because originally I was, you know, I was recording myself on their phones, and then we decided to play around with it a little bit. But I think for pelvic physios or OTs, you know, sometimes we can feel a little self-conscious about it. But I mean, you literally have written the script for us in here. So I just send patients out, you know, to buy the book and have a read through it. And, you know, we might try it together. You know, I'll just tell them to sit there, close their eyes, and I'll read through it. And did you like that? Or I like this part, but maybe not this part. And well, what about this one instead? And because there's a menu, there's a buffet of choices here. We find one that clicks and say, okay, so now you go record that on your phone and do it every day. Because sometimes I've had people come to me and say, oh, I tried meditation, it didn't work for me. Well, how many times did you try it? Once. Didn't work. And it's like, you know, but it's like going to the gym. You know, you have to build up these muscles. And I think, you know, this kind of gradual but repeated exposure to these strategies in a way that doesn't make you feel self-conscious or unsafe. It's tremendous. Like, as you may have guessed, I'm a big fan of the book.
so glad. Thank
you know, I'm totally fangirling here. I want to also just share the stop procedure, because I think that's a really nice one, particularly for, I would say, for people in their own lives, but also maybe people who are having pelvic rehab treatment, you know, because one of the things that we say is that when we're giving, you know, we're making sure people have informed consent about what's actually going to be happening, if, especially if we're doing internal work, that, you know, you can change your mind at any point. You are in control. And I think that's really important for somebody who's had a trauma or abusive situation where their power has been taken away. But you write about the stop procedure. S stands for stop. T stands for take a breath. O stands for observe. And P stands for proceed. And I think just to give people that sort of framework for, okay, I don't have to panic. Nobody's going to think worse of me, but it just gives you a chance to kind of sit a little bit deeper in your, in the saddle and make a decision that's not knee jerk, that you're actually, it's quite considered, but you are back in the driving seat again. You know, so many useful tools. The mind is the architect and the body is the builder.
You know,
love us. I love us. Alex, I want to be really respectful of your time here today. If there's one key takeaway that you would like to share with pelvic rehab therapists, particularly people who are working with folks who've been through trauma or abuse or who are dealing with persistent pelvic pain, where is a good place to start? What's a key skill that you would love to see more people embracing and developing?
Yes. Two things come to mind. One, I think when we're talking about how the body is connected and how, and the importance of downregulating the nervous system, any type of pain science education or body education, the use of stories and metaphors is a worldwide language. Mm-hmm. And you know, because there's what I've learned even in couples therapy and relationship therapy is people can be speaking the same language and still not understand each other. But as soon as we bring in a metaphor or a story, people get it, it clicks. Yeah. And so to get to know the client or the person or even yourself, and to use a metaphor that makes sense within their context, right? If I'm working with a gardener, I'm going to use a garden metaphor. If I'm using with a computer programmer, I'm going to talk about updating the hardware before we update the software. If I'm talking to, you know, an athlete, I'm going to talk about, okay, we need to get your head in the game because that's where your body's going to remember the skills that you've already learned, right? So to find the narrative and the metaphor that works is the best way for the brain to click save. And we know that the brain remembers stories more than rote facts anyways. The second piece is going to be to start with some type of bilateral stimulation. Because of how the brain changes, we can get stuck in the right brain, which keeps the nervous system upregulated and creates an imbalance of brain activity, which creates more of a rigid movement. So when we're looking at, again, athletes or physical therapy, or even just wanting to be able to walk down the street in a fluid way, which is very important for the hips and the pelvis, we need the brain to be balanced. And so there's two favorite ways. If someone wants to be more passive, they can just listen to bilateral stimulation music with headphones, and it does it for them. And so often I hear, you know, within 10 minutes of listening to it, someone will say, I finally was able to read a whole paragraph without my brain getting distracted, or without me getting a headache, or without, you know, that brain fog. But it's also really wonderful to do during physical therapy interventions. So during, you know, whether you're at your physiotherapist or if you're doing the exercises at home, because our issues are in our tissues, as the myofascial, you know, person said way back when, you know, different things are going to be waking up when we're waking up the body in that way, whether it's through breath work or through stretches or through manual manipulation. And so if we can have the bilateral stimulation in our headphones and helping the brain process as it's coming up, we're going to help just get the body, you know, get all that stuff released from the body exponentially faster. But if they're wanting something more, if they're willing to do something that's more engaging, the emotional freedom techniques, which is meridian tapping on different stress reduction points on the body, that research has just been skyrocketed over the past 10 years. And there's now over 300 clinical studies demonstrating not only that does it work pretty quickly in terms of calming down the nervous system, we see the amygdala calm down, we see the brain activity balance, but we see changes on the genetic level within 30 minutes of tapping. And so we're literally tapping into being able to turn off genetic trauma and ancestral trauma and generational trauma, which is huge, right? Wow. This is when the body's reacting more intensely because our ancestors have also experienced similar injury or trauma in that part of the body. And we wouldn't know that consciously, right? But the body remembers, our genes remember, just like we can take someone that has diabetes and go five generations back in their DNA and say, yes, this person experienced a famine, which is why your body adapted. And now food is abundant for some of us. But your body has, your DNA hasn't changed back yet to realizing that there's no longer a famine. And so the tapping is just remarkable. And what we see is if we're even just tapping while being mindful, while focusing on the sensations in the body or the stress that's in our mind or in our heart, so many different physiological components come back into balance without needing to specifically talk about those issues. So for example, we see insomnia go away without needing to say tap specifically on the stress about insomnia. We see PTSD scores drop again within 30 or 60, even just within one session, let alone six sessions of 30 minutes of tapping. We see people being able to go off their cholesterol medications or their blood pressure medications. We see their thyroid balance out. We see digestion balance out. I mean, the body is just waiting to heal. Mm. And that's what I want people to remember. You are in a magnificently intelligent body that is waiting to heal and to get better and to grow and to flourish. And so we just need to get all the shit out of the way.
Quite literally sometimes.
Literally. Quite literally. Yes, exactly. But we can do that. And medicine is here to support us when they can, and that can be helpful and it has its place. As far as jump-starting the system sometimes with medication or different surgeries, like say for endometriosis and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I do think the body is, and I've seen the body be capable of just healing and releasing all by itself too, when we give it the right tools.
It doesn't have to be either or, they can all work beautifully together. God forbid we get shot or stabbed, we're going to go to the hospital and avail ourselves of cutting edge medicine.
Right.
But to deal with the after effects of that, we really have to have an integrated approach because the body keeps the score.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
So much more detail about all those things that you talked about in this book, Hello Down There, available from all good bookshops. And of course, Mr. Bezos Empire as well. Where can people find out more about you? Can they follow you on social media? What are your handles?
Yes. So Instagram is Dr. Alex Millspaugh. Same with my website is dralexmillspaugh.com. I think that's about it. I'm just on Instagram and my website. Right now I'm the National Director of Behavioral Health for Pelvic Rehabilitation Medicine, which is just a beautiful practice of physiatry. So physical rehabilitation physicians that, again, what I love about their approach is so similar to physical therapists, is that they zoom out and they look at the bigger picture. Yeah. So I have the honor of just working with people all over the country and working with PTs that we've connected with in those major cities. And, my goal is to just spread the news, right?
Yes.
Spread the love and to know that there's hope, know that there's a way, there's a path. And it's a little bit different for everybody, but there is
hope and there's help out there. And I think that is a really important message, because I think sometimes, when what we do is we basically talk about pelvic health all day, every day, we realize that maybe normal people don't do that. And they may not be aware. I know, particularly in public sometimes.
Yes.
But, you know, I mean, I think we have to just really normalize the conversation about pelvic health, about pelvic pain, and then also about the solutions to the problems that people are having, and just to really take away the stigma and embarrassment and provide that multidisciplinary collaborative approach going forward, which is why I was so excited to talk to you today.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You've been so generous with your time, but with also some really great pearls of wisdom to get people going. Again, more in the book. And I would strongly encourage you to follow Dr. Millspaugh on Instagram. She posts some really great stuff. But at this point, I'm just going to say thank you again. And I will see you in the next episode. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. I hope you'll subscribe. You can find me on Instagram, Michelle_Lyons_MuleyEberty, or join the mailing list at celebratemuleyeberty.com to stay up to date on all things women's health. See you next time. Bye for now.